save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi everyone, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg, and I'm your host of Yoga, Birth, Babies, and we have a really fun and interesting conversation ahead. It's called, What Are the Three Most Common Conflicts That Arise Among Mom Friends and How to Solve Them? Now, we go so much deeper than just these three common conflicts. We talk about why female friendships can be tricky and how to navigate mom friends that might feel a little bit tricky. We talk about how to create and maintain better female friendships, and then why can it be harder as an adult to find and create friendships? I really enjoyed this conversation. So much of my guest speaking, my head was just like, yes, I agree. Let's go further into this. Let's talk deeper. It was really, really a great conversation that as a parent or an expectant parent, I think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. I have Danielle Byard Jackson. She is a female friendship coach and an educator who speaks nationally about the science of women's platonic connections. She's also the author of Fighting for Our Friendships. Danielle's coaching business, Friends Forward, is dedicated to teaching women how to create and maintain better female friendships, and her expertise has been featured in the New York Times, NBC News, Psychology Today, Wall Street Journal, Oprah Magazine, so many other media outlets. And I can see why, because Danielle really gives amazing information, so wonderful to speak with, so down to earth, that if you are navigating these new waters as a new parent or expectant parent, I think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. And she's just really fun to talk to. Before we get to that, I always love to give a little update about Prenatal Yoga Center. Heading into spring, it is beautiful out. I had the windows open at the studio the other day. It was just so great. I love spring in New York. It is just wonderful. So with that, we have our classes plowing forward. We have our online classes 7 days a week. We have our in-studio classes 6 days a week. We're wrapping up our teacher training for this. Remember, I think of everything in school year for this school year, getting ready to do our postnatal online teacher training. So we have so much brewing at the studio, and I'm really excited for you to dive into all that. We have our on-demand library. So check all our offerings out on our website. Our latest thing that I'm super excited to announce, we're calling it PYC Perks. It's discounts and giveaways from some of my favorite services and products that have been part of the PYC family for years. So the way that you get access to the PYC Perks is for all students that buy or renew a class card or class package. You get access to a members only webpage with all these fun perks and discounts. So check that out on our website. All right, that is enough of me. We're going to take a super quick break. When we come back, please enjoy my conversation with Danielle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As a busy working mom, I'm constantly juggling 1,000 things. So the last thing I want to have to worry about is if my family's drinking water is safe. Unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, virtually every home in America has harmful contaminants in its tap water. So finding AquaTrue purifiers was a huge sigh of relief. Aqua True Purifiers uses a four-stage reverse osmosis purification process, removing 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and are specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply. Aqua True has water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to high-capacity under-sink options. And the filters are affordable and long-lasting, so no changing filters every 2 to 3 months. Aqua True filters last 6 months to 2 years. Just one set of filters from their classic purifiers makes the equivalent of 4,500 water bottles. That's less than 3 cents a bottle. Plus, you'll save the environment from tons of plastic waste. Aqua True comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any Aqua True purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AQUATRU.com and enter code YBB at checkout. That's 20% off any Aqua True purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use promo YBB. Hi, Danielle. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited about this topic because I have to tell you, I've done so many topics about pregnancy and birth and breastfeeding, and I haven't really done one about mom friends. It's such a huge topic. And being a mom myself, I know the importance and yet also the challenge of it. So thank you for reaching out, because this is going to be a really great conversation.
Oh, no, I'm so glad that you are intentionally facilitating a moment to have this conversation, because friendship is so central and important to our lives to have that social support. So I'm excited to dive in.
So let's dive in, and I want to hear a little bit more about you, and how did you become a friendship expert, and what exactly is a friendship expert?
Yeah, it's so funny because I always joke that whenever I'm at a party and people are like, so what do you do? I'm like, oh God, you know, because I get those eyebrows raised in suspicion, like, girl, is that a real job? And I promise it's a real job. But I, you know, the short version of it is I actually started as a high school teacher working with 12th graders. And between class and after school, it's the number one thing the students wanted to talk about was their I hate saying the drama, but the issues with their friendships, especially the young women in my class. And then I became the academic chair. So I was leading a department of more than 30 teachers. And at our staff meetings, they'd be talking about the drama they had in the classroom with the kids. And I'm friends with this person and I want to change my seat and just all of that. And so I left the classroom and I got into the world of public relations. So I suddenly find myself working with these high achieving, charismatic women. And it wasn't long before I realized that they too were secretly having their own issues of feeling satisfied in their friendships. Maybe they had tons of social connections, but did not feel deeply satisfied with them. But you just kind of get to a point where you're like, well, I guess this is just what it is. Mm-hmm. And it does not have to be that way. And so long story short, I went home one day, I looked up friendship books, and this was 6 years ago. At the time, there weren't many results. And I suddenly got very curious about what research exists about adult friendships and women's connection and communication. And so now I leverage my background as an educator to teach what the research has to say about women's connections and conflict.
Can I ask a personal question?
Yeah.
So I'm going a little off script, folks. So how do you feel your own friendships changed when you started to dive into that info?
They changed in two ways. The first is you can't study this stuff and not have it touch your personal relationship. So the more I learned about what helps people feel known or safe or secure, or what healthy conflict looks like, I'm downloading that information in my brain. And now I see opportunities suddenly to practice it. You know, when a friend's upset, you know, what do I say? Or if I made a mistake, or if I want more connection, how do I achieve that? And so using the research to form tangible strategies has directly impacted my friendships in a very positive way. And I also would say that it's made me a lot braver because it shows me what the norms are. When I see that, you know, most women have this tendency according to the research, or most women do this and that, I realize, oh, it's not just me. And it makes me braver in the decisions I make in my friendships.
can I keep kind of peeling away at this? I know I'm going so off script. I promise we'll go back to what we plan on talking about, but
yeah,
I'm kind of fascinated. This is what happens when someone gives me a microphone and said, Deb, have a podcast. I get curious and I want to know things. So what are some of those, I guess, strategies as well as like some of the tendencies that are kind of common throughout friendships?
Oh, totally. So if we're talking about women's friendships specifically, women do have a tendency to ruminate more than men, which is why they believe that women are more prone to anxiety and depression. And so I have to realize, well, hold on a second. I've been chewing on this for too long. I need to do something to disrupt it. I either need to ask my friend directly, hey, what did you mean by what you said last night? I need to, you know, get really clear on if this is a solvable thing or not, you know, I have to be clear on certain things so that I'm not ruminating endlessly, which is, you know, physically and mentally detrimental, and take some kind of action to get that out of my mind and get things moving and get us back on the same page. I need to be forgiving because people aren't perfect, you know? And so I have to give my friends margin for error the same way they've got to do for me. I feel confident to start conversations with people because I have a certain skill set I've developed. And I also have read research around how people tend to greatly underestimate how much others like them reaching out. So we won't initiate texts or calls because we're like, oh, that would be weird. But we consistently underestimate how much people appreciate it. And the research finds that the more a person's surprised, the better that impact, the more the appreciation. And also there's something called the liking gap that I learned about, which finds that we tend to underestimate how much a person likes us in the first interaction. So again, pairing that with the research on rumination, you know, if you're leaving a social interaction, beating yourself up like, oh gosh, it turns out a lot of us do that. And so instead of me doing that and thinking, okay, well, that was probably awkward. I'm not going to call her back. I'm probably being hard on myself. She probably likes me just fine. And I am going to text her next week because I'd love to go to coffee with her again. You know, so just that confidence in knowing I have a tendency to pull away, fear rejection. We're scared to start conversations. We're scared to go deeper. And what can I do to be bolder in those decisions? And what can I do to develop resilience when things don't work out? Because sometimes they won't.
Yeah.
And so the bravery, I think, in my personal life has definitely developed with the things that I'm learning in a very intellectual way.
I think you really, I'm really excited to go deeper into this, but I think you really hit it because everyone likes to be thought of. Like, I get absolutely delighted when I get a text from somebody that just saying hi or they were thinking of me. It is absolutely delightful. Everyone wants that. All right. So let's pull this into specifically female friendships because they can be tricky. So why do you think female friendships can be tricky?
Oh, buddy. Okay. So it's kind of like, where do we start? So I did write my book on this. My book is called Fighting for Our Friendships. And the whole thing that I'm trying to do is help to explain the mechanics of women's friendships, because the research does show that our friendships are in fact more intimate than men's friendships, yet they are more fragile. Why is that? And so there's a couple, there are many things at play, but just to be concise and quick about it. The first is that the research shows that we tend to have greater expectations than men do in our close relationships. This includes both romantic and platonic relationships. We expect more. But what I've learned is it's compounded, or the reason that's an issue is because we often won't say what those expectations are because we believe we shouldn't have to because you're another woman, so you should know. And so if I expect a lot from you, but I refuse to tell you what I want you to do because I think you should intuitively know my desires, needs, boundaries, preferences, that's an issue. It's inevitably going to set us up to have gaps, disconnection, and disappointment. So that's kind of one thing I've noticed for women that makes things a little tricky. The next reason it might feel like our friendships that we're having fallouts and people dismiss us as having drama and friendship breakups. You know, I just want to validate the woman who feels like, you know, I've had friendships end and there's drama. What's wrong with me? The research shows that men integrate their friends into their lives to the degree of a cousin, but women integrate their friends into their lives to the degree of a sibling. So we probably are having more friendship endings technically, because you are so deeply integrated into my life. I'm probably not having a fallout with someone I'm not close with. Mm. That doesn't make sense. And so when men say like, oh, we've been friends for 20 years, I never have arguments. Right. You're also talking to him once every 3 months and you can't tell me any details about his life, his job, his wife, his children. You know what I'm saying? So like there is a certain safety and anonymity that happens when you're not very intimate, where you don't see each other often. But if the women in my life were like helping raise my children, giving me emotional support, giving me access to resources, hearing about my day and my goals, we're so deeply interconnected. And so there's going to be some complications there. And I'll end with this. I actually looked up the word complicated once when my husband said it to me kind of as a dig. He was like, oh gosh, you're never going to see men having friendships so complicated. That's just so complicated. And one night I'm like, I just Googled it. I'm like, let me just see, what is the definition of complicated? And it said the intersection of many parts. And that's exactly what women's friendships are. And so to some degree, it will be complicated, but it doesn't have to be this unknowable mystery. There are things we can learn about how to optimize our platonic relationships with one another.
Oh, I really like that. Well, I guess this is kind of heading into the mom friends, because when I was first a mom, a lot of my friends did not have kids or they already had their kids. So I was kind of like the middle of it. And when I was looking for people, sometimes it was more platonic, just take a walk with them. Sometimes it got a lot deeper. So I guess let's start to talk about more specifically mom friends, because that can be a little tricky to navigate as well.
Yeah. So I think the challenges sometimes that come with mom friends, there's a lot of beautiful things about having a woman who's in the same season as you. She understands your lifestyle. She affirms this aspects of your identity that you're a mom. So, and offers a certain level of understanding that maybe child-free friends can't. So there's so much that's supportive and life-giving about having mom friends. But there are some challenges. Some that I've noticed are, you know, we tend to maybe gravitate towards certain mom friends where our kids are in the same life season. And so that keeps us connected. But then as our kids grow and adopt new interests and things like that, it kind of pulls us apart as well, I've noticed. There's also sometimes a lot of room for judgment because we're watching how she parents and the choices that she makes. And sometimes we think to ourselves like, oh gosh, I can't be friends with somebody who, you know, gives sugar after 7 o'clock, you know, and I don't mean to minimize it, but I've definitely been there. You know, recently I had a friend who shared with me a decision she made with her child over the weekend. And my first thought was like, ooh, that's not okay. And I don't think I was being judgy. I really feel like the choice she made is not the safest thing. But, you know, I had to tell myself, okay, hold on a second. We are not always going to make choices that mirror each other's. And I have to ask myself, this woman wants her kids to be safe and happy the way I want my kids to be safe and happy. And she's making the choices that she thinks are best to achieve that. We are the same in that regard. So having to assess which things or which differences are influencing our friendship, they're a threat to my values, they're harming my child. And then which are the ones that are just like, ah, she's choosing differently than I might, but we can still be friends. It's okay. And that's kind of a skill and something I'm still very much actively practicing. So it can be tricky in that way for sure.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. Now, you totally caught me when you wanted to talk about the three most common conflicts that arise. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm very curious what those are. Okay, we'll take a super quick break. We'll be right back.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, we're back. So what are the three most common conflicts that arise between mom friends? And then I want to know, how do we resolve them?
Yeah, so one that I often hear is if the kids aren't getting along, or they have a disagreement, how that naturally kind of permeates the mom's relationship, because there's some friction there. So if the kids have an issue, it coming to the moms, and then now we have an issue because our kids had an issue. So that's something that can be kind of tricky. Another one that I often hear is about being left out. You know, that you get three mom friends who either with their kids or without go and do an activity and discovering you weren't invited, but your kids are friends with their kids and you guys just all went out last week. And so feeling a lot of rejection when certain mom friends come together and you weren't involved, is one. And then, I think the final piece would be what I said earlier about, a lot of like judgment and criticism, of the choices that we make as moms, that can naturally create a certain emotional and then sometimes physical distance within the friendship.
Can I throw one more in there?
Ooh, I'd love to hear it.
I think comparison, not criticism, but comparison. Mm-hmm. I found that, and I'll be very transparent, I found that with some of my own friendships. One of my very good friends, her son is about 10, 11 months older than mine. I found that we often were comparing. And some of that didn't always feel great. But then other comparison, some of it was helpful. Like I remember my friend being like, what kind of shoes are you going to get your son? And I'm like, he was just turning one. I'm like, oh my gosh, they need shoes. Like it didn't even occur to me. I'm like, he's walking. I guess he needs shoes. So some of the comparison cannot be the healthiest. And then some of the comparison could be more conversational and actually helpful. So mm-hmm. I guess that falls under conflict and then also helpful.
Oh, totally. And I totally see that kind of maybe either even being the other side of the coin of the criticism aspect. I think that, I don't know if how many of us would admit this, but you know, we're all kind of walking around, I feel, with this perpetual question mark over our heads. And that question sometimes is, am I a good mom? I want to be a good mom. That's why I'm pulling the best things to feed them and the best clothes to wear and the best schools. I want to be a good mom. And so if I feel like I've done all the research and I made a choice around what they should eat or where they should go, and then I see a mom who made different choices, it is kind of like cognitively disruptive because who's wrong, me or her?
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, because I made this choice in a very like systematic way, this is best, but she's choosing that way. She's not doing the best, you know? And so there's a lot of that. I think that might be on, you know, the same coin, you know, where I'm criticizing her because I feel like she's not falling in line with the decision I made, which is kind of obviously the right decision, you know, so that can be really tricky. And then to your point about comparison, you know, to some degree, it is helpful. That's how we kind of have a society that functions is there are certain norms and you kind of have to look around to see, okay, what's the norm? How do we operate here so I can get in line? And so I don't know the gauge of what's right or wrong or acceptable or not, unless I look at the group, the surrounding group. Okay, what are we all doing here? What's safe and appropriate and acceptable. So to some degree, we are looking around and saying, oh, shoot, I guess, man, should my kid already be talking or walking? Like comparing is helping me kind of form what I ought to do to know what's in line. So to some degree, that's very helpful, right? But then yes, of course, it can be very detrimental if I'm comparing to feel superior or if I'm comparing to feel confident in the choices I've made or if I'm comparing because I want to criticize. And so I agree with you that kind of keeping that in check can be really important.
Yeah. So, all right. So what are ways to resolve these issues?
Yeah. So, you know, so let's start with comparison since we're there. The first is to kind of tell yourself, like I said in that other scenario is, okay, I feel secure with my choices and I think these choices are best for our family. To some degree, you're going to have to kind of add that qualifier. I think that this is best for our family. And you have to make room for the fact that not everything works for every family dynamic. For their goals they're trying to achieve, for their child's abilities and needs, everybody's different. And I know we all intellectually know that to be true. But then when it comes to living out real life, we don't always believe that. And so can I remind myself, hold on, I made this choice for my family. I'm secure in it. This works for our family. Because that will help me to stop constantly questioning my choices and being anxious and insecure when I discover that there's a new way to, you know, put on the onesie or feed lunch or, you know, I have to be secure at some point in my choices and know that they work for us. But that will also anchor me when I find myself getting a little judgy about other moms and my mom friends. If there's separation emotionally because I learn what she's doing parenting wise about either discipline or feeding or schooling, and I disagree, and I start to conflate that differing choice with her character. I can't be friends with a woman who would discipline like that or talk like that, you know? So just kind of being mindful along the way is really helpful. To the issue of being left out, I made a video, I think about a year or two ago, about 10 reasons you may have been not invited. And it went mega viral. And I don't think that it's just me. I think it's a reflection of how tender this subject is for a lot of people. And so if you're frustrated because you feel like there are certain mom friends who are gathering and they don't invite you, it could be a couple different things, but we tend to think they did it maliciously, intentionally, they don't like me. Okay. But some other possibilities are they were physically all in the same vicinity and it was easy. Do you guys want to all go to the park? Do you guys are you all free for coffee? It was just an act of convenience. It could also be because they're a certain kind of group and they wanted to achieve a certain kind of goal that you wouldn't fit, which I know is harsh to hear. But let's say they're all church friends and they're trying to have a certain conversation, or if they all got together on date night and they were going to play games and they invited people and their partners, and currently you're in a single season. And I know people tend to say, it doesn't matter, invite me to all the things. And I know some people might disagree, but sometimes if you have a certain goal or objective for a social gathering, not everybody fits that goal. And it's just the truth. It doesn't mean they like you any less, right? Or so it's just something to grapple with. I know some might disagree, but something to keep us, you know, just keep us mindful. And then also maybe you've expressed a lack of interest or a disdain for the thing that they're going to do or the thing they're going to talk about. And if they don't want to be judged, or if they want to talk freely about a topic and not bore you or offend you, they might gather a group who's open to talking about this thing or doing this thing. And the final thing I'll say is I've seen women not invite other women because they actually think they're being benevolent. And so what I mean by that is if you have been open about how you are having a financial struggle, I've seen women say, oh my gosh, you know, they think they're being helpful by not mentioning the trip that they're all going to take this weekend because they don't want you to feel uncomfortable or to be unable to go. I've seen women say like, oh, well, I know that you don't have the availability. Like you have four kids, four little ones. So we, of course we didn't ask because like, there's no way you could probably go on the 2-day trip with us, you know, with the four little ones. So, I mean, again, people might push back and I understand, but I'm just trying to offer some very real possibilities for why you didn't get invited that might help save your friendship. And if at the end of the day, you're ever unsure, you can always say you like to go. I don't think that makes you clingy or desperate to say like, oh my gosh, I saw that you guys all, you know, went to the mountains this weekend, or I saw that you guys went to that cafe. Oh, I've been meaning to check it out. Hey, if you go again, I'd love to come with. I'd love to see what all the hype's about. You know,
this so came up with me recently with, I have,
how did that go?
It was interesting. So there was this four families, in one of my little groups, and we've traveled small travels together. And I'm always very planned, like the end of the summer, we always go to the beach. And for my son's bar mitzvah, we're also going on a big trip. We're supposed to go to Israel, but that got canceled. So we're going out rock climbing in Canada instead, which is great. And so I'd been talking about this for months and months and months. And then some of my other friends, the other three families, had planned to go to France. And when I found out about it, I'm like, oh, I guess I didn't get an invitation. I was really upset. And they're like, but you said you were going to the beach. And I'm like, well, I would have liked the invitation so we can make a choice. And so then they're like, of course, here's the information. At that point, honestly, because we're already doing the Canada trip, I'm like, we couldn't afford to go there as well. But I was upset and I appreciated the offer, but they had just assumed that it wasn't going to work. So we had to talk about it. We got it out in the open. But yeah, it definitely, there was a beat where I was not thrilled about that. But yeah, we did talk it out.
But I love that you talked it out to let them know like, hey, you know, this is my situation, or I'd like to be asked, or like, hey, I felt some kind of way, so that people know, oh, this is the expectation, or, oh, I didn't know that they take trips sometimes, just the two of them instead of the group, you know, so it helps to continually recalibrate expectations and make sure everybody's on the same page, as opposed to you say nothing, you stew with it, you assume, oh, I guess they don't like me. I wonder if they were talking about me. I guess they don't, you know, so I'd rather us have it in the open and kind of settle some things, as opposed to you discover two people went out without you and now making all these assumptions around the level of closeness or the intentions in that friendship. But I know it's hard. That's a tough one. Some people disagree with me and I'm like, I hear it, but you know, I'll say this. It also kind of helps our, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but I'm just making the connection here. Our kids also watch us. Mm-hmm. It's not just about what we explicitly teach them. They're watching us. We're modeling it. How do they see me deal with not being invited in a particular activity? Am I ranting about it? Am I talking about how these people are awful? Am I talking about how you can't trust people these days? Am I talking about, you know, well, then I'm not going to invite her to my party this week. They're watching you. And right. I don't mean to sound intense.
Oh, it's 100% true. No,
It's just true. And of course, if you have friends in your life and you notice there's a pattern and they're secretly having things without you, that's a whole other conversation. I'm not talking about the friend who never reciprocate or show interest and they're never inviting you. That's a different conversation. But for the friend who has given you evidence over the course of your friendship history that she loves you, that she enjoys your company, and that she's there for you, and then doesn't invite you to a small little thing she had, you know, last weekend, you have to kind of use discernment. Man, mm-hmm. She's always inviting me, but she didn't this time. I don't think that makes her a fake friend, you know? Right. And if I'm curious, I'm going to ask. And so it kind of comes down to that skill and those perspectives. And then the last thing I'll say is that we made a point about, you know, when the kids don't get along and how to reconcile that. Mm. Again, I think the issue is just figuring out what to separate, like what's harmful, what's necessary to separate, and what things really do demand you intercede or interrupt. And so if our kids had a little scuffle one night and they're coming home upset about it, to what degree do I say, okay, well, you guys got to work it out? Or is this something I really need to elevate to the mom and say, like, well, he said, you know, so again, it's a case by case thing, but constantly asking myself, is this something that will cause long-term harm? Is this something that I really think as parents, we need to intervene? Is this something that I think it can be a long-term issue? And so we need to have a conversation, or is this something where my little one's going to have to learn how to work that out? And I'm not even bringing it up to my mom friend, because it's just a little thing and the kids will get over it. So it's a case by case, but asking yourself, how disruptive this would be to my friendship. Is it worth elevating, or is it something that the kids are just going to have to work out? So for example, my kids are little, but I know I hung out with a friend once and her son was like, or her daughter, like kind of pushes my daughter a lot. Like, and I'll have to eat, and I'm sitting there trying to like, let her be tough and watch her, let her react. And then after the third time, I said it playfully. I said, let's say my friend's name is Jen. Playfully, I said, okay, Jen, if you're raising a little boxer here, we're going to have to stay on the other side of the house, girl. You know, so it was playful, but my subtext was, we're going to have to separate ourselves. That keeps happening, but it wasn't an intensely serious conversation. It was a playful in the moment comment about this pattern and how that's not going to be okay for us. And she acknowledged it. It made her more aware. And she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it has not been an issue since.
I like that. I like how you did that. All right. So we talked about some issues and conflicts that tend to arise in mom friends. So let's kind of go the other way. What are some ways women can create and maintain better female friendships?
There's a couple. I'll give two things.
Okay.
One thing that can immediately enhance your friendships is to stop assuming that the way you think and operate is the way everybody thinks and operates, because it is a relationship killing myth. I cannot tell you how many times women have said to me, Danielle, I should not have to tell her that. She should know that. She should know that. I know you think it should be obvious. I'm telling you, it's not. And what I've noticed is, you know, the research says that the number one thing women look for in their same-sex friendships is emotional support. I think it's interesting that that's the number one grievance I often hear. They didn't support me. They won't support me. They didn't support me. What does support even look like to you? And this is where you think, oh, come on, that's obvious. It's really not. Does support look like daily texts? Does support look like unprompted checking in on the last thing that you said? Does support just look like just being quiet and saying the right things when you vent? showing up to the house, or can I just send you flowers? You know, what does support really look like for you? Validating and repeating back to you what you're saying? Or do you want me to hold you accountable and you appreciate that kind of support? And so to be able to say, hey, this is what I actually think I need, and equipping friends with tangible data of how to show up for you should not be a game. You're gonna have to make it plain. And that's one way to immediately experience more satisfaction in your friendships. And the last thing I'll say is to get comfortable expressing platonic desire. And we do it romantically, where we say, hey, babe, you know, I want to take you out, or hey, babe, I want more time with you. And we want our spouses or partners to do that with us. But there's something about friendship where we somehow believe that it should be easy, natural, and organic. And I don't want to seem clingy. I don't want to seem difficult. So I'm not going to say what I need. I'm not going to express that I want to hang out with her more. You got to say the thing. So to be very expressive about platonic desire, hey, I'd love to see you more. I love laughing with you. Or I always love our time together. I'd love to get together again. You know, it feels very vulnerable and risky, but I found that it's always worth it.
That, yeah, I totally agree. Those are really, really good points. It's funny because my husband and I have conversations a lot about the way we communicate. It's some are similar and some are different. So we often talk about what each one needs to feel supported. And after, gosh, how long have we been together? Like 16 years. It's been a while. You know, I've figured it out. But it, as you're saying that, I'm like, that is the same in friendships too. Understanding how each person needs to be supported, because it's not the same across the board. Oh, I really like that.
Mm-hmm. And there's even research that shows that, you know, there's almost like this, that women who are not, who don't offer sufficient verbal, emotional support are almost penalized. And I think that's why they tend to say that women who have certain neurodivergent issues really struggle with female friendship, because there's so much that's unspoken. And so there's an expectation she's going to offer adequate support, whatever that looks like. There's an expectation she's just going to intuitively know. But it's just not fair. It's not fair that in a professional context, we have performance reviews and we sit down and we talk about how we're doing. And with our partner, we sit down every now and then. We're like, babe, we need more date nights. We need more this. I'm feeling disconnected. But in friendship, you ought to just know. And if we have any tensions, that's evidence that we're not as compatible as I thought. It's just not fair. And so I think the sooner women realize, hey, if I want more satisfaction, it's okay for us to talk about it. That's not weird. Then you will experience more satisfaction.
I really appreciate that. Okay, so this is a question. When I brought this topic up to some of my students, somebody asked, why is it harder to make adult friends? And I thought, I'm going to ask that. That's a great question. So why do you think making friends in adults is harder?
I'll give you three reasons. The first is the research does show that your social network grows and grows and grows until about the age of 26, at which point it begins to decrease. And this makes sense because this is the point where, you know, your friends start to have different goals that take them in certain directions. Maybe they're super serious about their job, so they are putting in more hours at work. Maybe they want to establish family ties and settle down, so that's what they're doing. But until that point, you guys have kind of been on the same trajectory. Like, you're at school and you see each other for hours a day. And that's why we tend to romanticize how things used to be in school. Well, because you were with the same people, forced to be with them for hours a day. And there's something about that consistency in that environment that makes it easier to make friends. We have the same goals right now in our lives. We see each other for 8 hours a day, you know, and so there's something about that container that really helped us form friendships. Well, at some point you have to start to manufacture those opportunities on your own. And a lot of us haven't, we have no practice doing that. And we're thinking that the same script for friendship we had at 14 is going to apply at 37. And it doesn't work that way. So I would say the first thing is just, you know, the fact that we have different obligations that demand our time, and we've got to be intentional at figuring out how to stay connected in the loop. And we've never done that before. So that makes friendships feel, I think, a little bit difficult. I think the next thing is that we are scared of rejection, just like teenagers. People often ask me, you know, what's the difference between working with high schoolers and adults? And I'm like, not much. You know, the details might look different, but who among us wants to be rejected? And so I think the fear of that keeps us from pursuing friendships with women who we think are kind of cool and we're curious about. Or, you know, I think that is kind of a challenge, is that fear to be active. And I think the last challenge is, you know, a lack of time. And there are demands on our time. That's very real. But I personally think a lot of us say, well, I just don't have the time for it. And so we don't lean in. And then we look around and we're like, oh my gosh, I have no friends. Well, you haven't prioritized it because you still see friendship as a recreational activity of having women to go to brunch with. But there's just way too much research that shows that friendship is a wellness imperative, and it has a direct impact on your physical, mental, and emotional health. So the first thing you've got to do is start valuing friendship the way you would anything else. And that right there, that reprioritization might make all the difference.
I'm going to throw in people are tired. It's
funny. When you're tired. You're really, really tired.
Well, it's funny. I have these other two friends that we see each other always for our birthdays. And then whenever we can, our kids are good friends, but we like to go out for just our little girls' night. And my friend Kim is like, Deb, you're not in your pajamas right now. I feel really special because she is a night owl. And for us to go out, we need to get the kids at least to a certain point of sustaining, and then our husbands take over. And so we'll go out at like 8. Now, everyone else has probably listened to like 8. That's nothing. But for me, by like 8:30, I want to start to be winding down, washing my face, getting ready for bed. Because I wake up at 5:18 in the morning to exercise. So I'm like asleep by 9:30. So my friend Kim always jokes that she's like, do you have your pajamas under your clothes? Like, so I'm going to throw in, you have to make an effort for those that you really want to. Because for me, I'm tired. I don't love to go out at night. So I'm going to throw that in there as an obstacle.
Oh yeah. I think that's so true. And two literally super quick tips I'll give on that are people like you, like me, who are like, I'm just tired. I don't have it to give, right? Like this all sounds good, but I don't got it. Two things. The first is be very clear on your top three girls who you want to spend time with. If you are still trying to think you can hang out and do coffees with 15 different people, you're going to continue to feel like you don't have time, but you're trying to do too much with too many people. Who are your 3 to 5 that you can really concentrate your efforts with? Because even the research tells us that it takes 34 hours to move someone from an acquaintance to a friend, right? Wow. If that's the case, I can't be doing that with everybody. Time's a limited resource. It just doesn't work. So I hope that doesn't sound, you know, like I'm telling you to be exclusive or kick people out. Like we might be able to still meet as a group, but when I'm talking about calling and taking time from my children to come and be with you, I'm going to be intentional about who I'm investing that with. So get clear about your 3 to 5. And then the second tip I'll say for the burned out, tired woman is to rethink what hanging out looks like. If you still think that getting together with friends looks like hours long brunches on Saturdays or late nights out at the club, you're going to continue to say, I don't have time, but I need you to rethink what it looks like. It's less sexy, but maybe clocking hours together looks like saying, hey, I'm going to Target in an hour. Come with me and tell me about your date last night while I get a couple things I need. I mean, that's what it looks like sometimes to spend hours with my friends is inviting them along with me on the mundane things of life. But the right people don't need to be entertained. All they need is you. And so we've got to stop thinking it's got to be a grand occasion to get together with the people we care about. That's not true.
I like that. All right, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, what is one final tip or piece of advice you would like to offer new and expectant parents? We'll be right back. We're back. Okay, so as we wrap up, what is one final tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new and expectant parents?
That it will not always be like this. How whatever discouragement you're feeling right now about feeling behind or feeling FOMO or feeling like it's really hard to manage a new baby and friendship, it will not always be like this. And your friendship landscape is going to evolve and there will be challenges. You won't have to be intentional, but it won't always be like this. And I think that's a certain optimism that a lot of us have to hold tightly to when we're in the trenches of new parenthood.
I really like that. Where can people find your work?
Yeah, so everything lives at betterfemalefriendships.com, and it's where we share research around women's friendships. And our prayer is just that the more you learn, the more it helps to inform the decisions you make around your friendships, and hopefully it leads to better, healthier friendships. So I just want to thank you for this time together and for facilitating a moment for us to talk about this, because it's so important in this specific season of our lives, and I appreciate you allowing me to lend my voice to the conversation.
Oh, Danielle, I had such a great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.